at accidents in Queensland Raceway where the Australian Touring Car Championship has finally entered the endurance round.
Oh, I just think I'm hungry for it, you know. In those laps, you know, it's anyone's lap, and if someone could put a lap together, they get the pole, and, you know, you're just trying to limit mistakes, and I think I'm good at that.
In qualifying, on my first hot lap on new tyres, we had a suspension failure and only got back out just to do one lap at the end, which actually got me into the shootout, otherwise we were out of it.
Turned four too deep and locked the rear brakes, and that was sort of the end of the gig. I had a good lap going up until then, and that was a silly error.
It's sad when the driver has to admit he's made a mistake. It doesn't happen very often, but look, coming out of the second left-hander in the complex there, you're actually in third gear, went to full fourth and actually grabbed six, and then had to get around a bit getting it back into the right gear, which is fourth, and just cost a couple of tenths really, and that would have been enough to get us up the point in. But in the normal qualifying, it was quick enough, and we know the car's quick, so we'll push on. Second rows are off.
From the racetrack around Australia, here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello, I'm Craig Revell.
I'm Colin Ford.
And I'm Peter Norton. Welcome to this week's episode of Inside Motorsport.
First up, let's look at Formula One, where tributes have been going out to the family of Ken Tyrrell, who died at age 77. Of course, Tyrrell and Tyrrell Motorsport, famous for their Formula One efforts, including the championship years with Jackie Stewart. Jonathan Ledyard looks back at Ken Tyrrell.
In the words of his most famous and successful driver, Jackie Stewart, Ken Tyrrell was the most important person in his life outside his family. He masterminded his success from the moment he first sat in a single-seater car in 1964 until he retired from Grand Prix racing in 1973. Between them, Stewart and the family-run Tyrrell team set the standard at the turn of the 1970s, backed by the all-conquering Cosworth engines. Others, like Jody Scheckter and Martin Brundle, all have reason to thank this large, imposing man, whose voice regularly rang out in the name of common sense as the sport he loved became increasingly corporate and political. His decision to sell to British American Racing in 1998 reflected his frustration and sadness. By then, Tyrrell had slipped well down the grid. The last of their 23 wins was in 1983. But the name and the memories would endure, even though one of the last great British privateers himself has gone.
Jackie Stewart also paid his respects to his former team owner and said he was a very influential part of his career.
Well, very saddened, because Ken was of course, a very, very important part of my life. He really was more of a father figure to me when I was a young racing driver than anything else, and he took me through my entire career. But more importantly, I suppose, because he was such a great man himself and lived in such a strict regime of integrity and trust. He's just one of those very unusual men. We started from the very first time I sat in a single-seater car, it was in front of Ken Tyrrell. And the last time I ever drove a car in anger, it was in his car. So he took me all the way through. So whatever I achieved in my life, he had more to do with it than anybody else. He also, of course, was an immense example, not just to me, but to so many other people. Because of the way he lived his life, the leadership qualities that he had, the loyalty that he had to all of his people who worked with him. It was amazing, really. He had more loyalty than any other man that I know. And again, his integrity was of such depth. I think it's those qualities that helped me as I went on from being a driver. For me to have understudied under such a man, when I came to go into business and other activities, these qualities were his qualities that I saw to be so important. When people were in try strife and trouble, they would discuss it with Ken Tittle. And he stood for what he believed with such rigidity. And he went against the system when he felt the system was wrong. And he did that at his own cost. It's an incredible cost in some cases, almost to the point of breaking him and his racing team at one point. But he believed that, and he always went with what he believed. And therefore, the fraternity of motorsport understood that and respected it and held him in the highest esteem. He really was responsible for bringing along so many young drivers, but also being an example for so many other people. And he was president of the British Racing Drivers Club until he felt too ill to continue that. But what he did for that club was enormous. Most people will never know that, but it was enormous. Again, he was a great Brit. I with fondness always. He was such a loyalist. I said he went to bed every night dressed in Union Jack pajamas, standing at attention, playing God Save the Queen on a 78. He was an unusual man of incredible integrity and depth. I mean, he's been the most important man in my life outside of my own family. It was a sad day for Ken when he sold his Formula One team. He never wanted to leave the sport. He loved racing. He and Nora, who he was married to for 58 years, lived that life totally and fully together. They always traveled together. They went to races together. She was a timekeeper. She was everything to Ken, and he was everything to her. And their life together in motor racing was something that they both sadly missed. It was sad for him that motor racing was no longer available to him in the way that he saw it. But on a lighter note, I have to say that he was a man who lived his life exactly as he wished it to be, and there can be no man who has achieved more in the way that he wanted to live it. I mean, he was a privateer as a racing driver, a racing owner, almost, against the big companies, in a sense, and the ever-growing bureaucracy that was surrounding it. And he went against that and was surviving against it and won the world championship for me alone 3 times, but also as a constructor. And it was his life, and he got so much fulfillment out of it.
Well, Marcus Gromholm, the local favourite, is leading the Rally of Finland, and Britain's Richard Burns, he's dropping back through the field to third. Greg Strange has this report from the BBC.
Well, he's still out in front, but the third place man, Richard Burns of England, is on a charge. He's third overnight, of course, some 24 seconds behind the second place man, Harry Rovanperä. We've just had the times in for the first stage for the leading four cars. Rovanperä is significantly slower on that first stage, and Burns faster. The gap, it was 24 seconds, it's now down to just over 6. Looking very interesting indeed. Colin McRae has gone faster too, but the overall order remains the same. Marcus Gronholm leads. Harry Rovanperä is second, 22.5 seconds behind Gronholm now. Richard Burns third, 28.7 seconds off the lead. And Colin McRae in the Ford fourth, 37.9 seconds. So it remains a 1-2 for Peugeot. Subaru in third and Ford in fourth. The cars are now coming to service. Burns clearly going through. I've just had a clip over the radio in my other ear while I'm talking to you. He said, I'm not prepared to finish third in this rally. So he's obviously very fired up this morning. We've got 2 stages left after this.
The latest round of the European Super Touring Championship is at the A1 ring in Austria this weekend. And it's Gabriele Tarquini who has blitzed the field to take pole position in his Honda Accord. Closest behind him is Fabrizio Giovinardi, over 3/10 of a second behind in his Alfa Romeo 156, with Nicola Larini in the second of the Alfa Romeo 156s taking third position on the grid. Behind him then is Roberto Colgaccio in the Audi A4 Quattro, Fabrice Wolfish in the Honda Accord, and then De Lorenzi in the first of the BMWs.
Other Formula One news, it seems Bobby Rahal is departing Jaguar. His departure leaves the Formula One team in Niki Lauda's full control. And Bernie Eccleston has denied that the French Grand Prix will be axed. The boss, he said that there are no plans to drop the French Formula One Grand Prix.
The latest round of the British Touring Car Championship is being held at Alton Park this weekend, and it's Formula 3 ace Andy Priaulx, who is filling in for the egg-backed racing Vauxhall Astra team, taking the place of Phil Bennett. He's actually taken two pole positions in his first time out with the British Touring Car Championship. As it is, there was some talk earlier in the week that the team did not want Priaulx to drive the car. However, the team sponsors Egg were apparently pushing for him to drive. But as it is, he's taken double pole position with in the sprint race. Andy Priaulx, he takes the pole from Ivan Muller, then Jason Plato, James Thompson, and Steve Soper in the first of the Peugeot sitting in fifth place. Then we have Eves and Harvey. In the feature race, which is a long race, again, Priaulx has the pole this time from Plato, then Muller, then Soper, actually quite interestingly doing very well to qualify fourth there in his Peugeot 406 Coupe, ahead of Thompson, then Harvey and Eves, positions reversed there. This weekend as well is the latest round of the DTM at the Nürburgring in Germany. And it's an Audi 1-2 with Laurent Aiello and Christian Abt taking the first two places on the grid. Apparently it was a very hot qualifying session, and the Audis were doing very, very well. In third on the grid is the Mercedes of Bernd Schneider, who looks like he's basically got the championship sewn up, from Uwe Alzen, another Mercedes, then Thomas Ekström in the Audi, fifth, and Maylander in the Mercedes, sixth. The best Opel is that of Timo Scheider, who's sitting in 10th position, nearly a second off the pole position time.
And Benetton have announced that they have signed Jarno Trulli to drive for them in the 2002 season. That does look like Mark Webber's opportunity to step up has been thwarted for the moment. But last weekend, the racing was in Hungary. Michael Schumacher wrapped up the Formula One Drivers' Championship, and Ferrari did the same with the Constructors' Championship. Here's Jonathan Ledyard's report from the BBC on the Hungaroring event.
Michael Schumacher needn't have worried. His foreboding that this wouldn't be his weekend proved as empty as the challenge of his rivals. He dominated and dictated in champion style, relentless, imperious, unstoppable. Only on the podium, as he fought back the tears and blew kisses to the crowd, did the four times world champion allow himself a breather. With four races remaining, Alain Prost's hold on his record is surely on borrowed time. And just for good measure, this was Ferrari's first 1-2 finish in Hungary, and confirmed the team as constructors champions for the second year running. David Coulthard's valiant effort foundered at the first corner when Barrichello jumped ahead. What's more, Ralf Schumacher's fourth place maintains the pressure on the Scot to be championship runner-up. Hakkinen was fifth, Heidfeld sixth. Retirements for Irvine and Button completed a joyless weekend for both.
After the event, the drivers sat down for their debriefing. Michael Schumacher was asked about how he didn't expect the championship to be wrapped up at the Hungaroring.
I was talking to the team during the long lap we did, the slow lap we did, and I was always trying to find the right words. And in such a moment, I'm probably not a bad racing driver, but I'm quite a bad person in finding the right words in such moments. So you have to forgive me. I can't say much more than it has been a beautiful weekend. I mean, we did everything we could have done. I came here not with such a good feeling for whatever reason. I told to Jean, I'm not sure this weekend is going to be the one it will happen. And then we got pole position. We got the victory. I did obviously equalise 51 with Alan, and I got my fourth championship. So it's a bit too much for me right now to take it, and I simply want to say that it's a great achievement, but the way it has been done is what makes me so feeling so fantastic, because the team around us, Rubens, myself, you can't believe how wonderful the guys are. How much we stick together in good times, in bad times, and particularly in bad times, and sometimes we had them as well. And we have such a great crew. I mean, such a good team. That's I'm really in love with all of them, and it makes such so much fun to work with them. It's their achievement, and I'm more than thankful to all of them.
This obviously being the fourth world championship early, but how do you feel it compares to the other three?
You always ask about comparison. I don't think that matters, actually. I think I simply want to enjoy that, and each one is different, and each victory feels different. It's always something special to win a Grand Prix, to win a championship even more. So that's what counts.
Thank you, Michael. Rubens, you pushed very hard all day to make sure you got that second place, which secures the Constructors' Championship for Ferrari. You must be very proud of your season.
I am. I am. After everything, you know, all people say, I think I'm having a wonderful season. And it's not because I'm beside him, but I'm, you know, really proud to be his teammate and be part of the party. After all, I think it's a fantastic party, it's a fantastic achievement. And you know, I think it's not just coincidence that when I joined the team, we all won the whole time. So it's something that I'm very proud of. And I think the team deserve and Michael deserves, so really, really proud to be within them.
Thank you. Talking for a moment about the actual race, were you firstly surprised when David was ahead of you after the first pit stop, and then surprised at the second pit stop when you got back ahead again?
To be honest, I had mixed emotions. I mean, the first one I was so disappointed, and the second one I was so happy. I couldn't believe myself. I mean, I think it's the same with him, with DC, but just the opposite. Fortunately for me, it worked out. I had a wonderful start. The first set of tires was a bit difficult to drive, so he was very close to me. I think he had a better lap in or a better pit stop, so he caught me there. And then I was driving really, really fast to beat him on the second one, and I was able to do a really quick outlap and be able to be in front of him. So I'm really happy for that.
Well done. Thank you, everybody. David, you tried so hard today to keep the championship alive for another race, but in the end it wasn't to be. Perhaps you can talk us through your race.
Well, obviously at the start, being on the inside seemed to be a disadvantage because Rubens was able to pass me quite easily, and Michael opened up quite a gap as we went down to turn one, so I knew it was going to be difficult from there. The fact that I was able to maintain the gap to Rubens made me realise there was a chance at the pit stops, and with the fuel we were carrying, I felt reasonably comfortable that you'd have to pit before me. And I, you know, pretty much just opposite of what Rubens is saying. Then obviously in that middle stint I was struggling a little bit more with the tyres. It wasn't a new set, and not sure at the moment what part of the in lap, the pit stop, or the out lap. Well, it wasn't the out lap because he passed me before the first corner, but certainly once something there cost me a little bit of time. But, you know, in reality, it was second place was the best that could be achieved today. And obviously today is about Michael's title and his win, and obviously I congratulate him on that achievement and recommend he takes a holiday for the last four Grand Prix.
I'd say last four Grand Prix, you're in a three-way battle for second place in the championship with Rubens and Ralph. How important is it to you to come second overall?
You know, really, I don't feel any emotion for finishing second. I only want to win. It makes no difference to me, really, whether I'm second, third, fourth, whatever it happens to be. What's important is how I perform in each of the individual races, and providing I know I've given 100% effort from myself, which I know isn't always the case, but that's obviously the goal, is to try and achieve that, then I can't do more than that. And it's not just your individual performance that decides where you finish in a championship.
Hi, David. So, Michael, is there a big party tonight?
Nothing is set up, but I'm sure we're good in, how do you say, improvising or some. We will find something. I'm pretty sure we will see what it will be, but it's going to be quite wet, I think.
And will you and Rubens be singing again?
Sorry?
And will you and Rubens be singing again?
We just had a little warm up before we came here on the podium, so yes, there will be. And a lot of singing tonight.
At the latest round of the British Formula 3 Championship held at Knockhill last weekend, atrociously wet and misty conditions saw the second of two races cancelled and the first race cut short. In the weather-shortened first race, Takuma Sato took another step nearer to the title by taking the race win in appalling conditions and led home his Carlin Motorsport Dallara Mugen teammate Anthony Davidson in a race which was halted 7 laps short of the full distance when conditions became just too bad to continue. Sato won the race at the green light as pole sitter Andy Prio stalled his Allan Docking Racing Dallara Mugen. Sato then held off Davidson into the first corner and then pulled out a comfortable lead. A safety car interlude a few laps later proved no problem, but as the cars toured around, the rain fell even heavier, combining with mist to make racing conditions perilous. Davidson stayed within range of Sato, but radioed his engineer to tell him to inform the leader that he'd be trying no funny business and was content just to finish the race in one piece. After a slow start, Australian driver James Courtney put some pressure on Davidson towards the end to complete the podium in his Jaguar Racing Dallara Mugen. A number of competitors in the race slipped, slid, skidded and crashed out of the race in conditions many described as the worst they've ever seen for an open-wheeler race. With the weather delaying the meeting and showing no sign of abating, the second race was postponed. However, it looks as if this will be run as a third event at the next round of the championship to be held at Thruxton in 2 weeks' time, using the group position set for the postponed second race at Knockhill. So looking at the Drivers' Championship for British Formula 3, it currently has Sato on 258 points, leading that championship from Hayes on 182, with Australia's James Courtney sitting third with 158 points, and then Davidson fourth on 153, and Courtney's teammate, the German driver Lotterer, fifth on 125.
Let's go across the pond now to the United States, where the CART FedEx Champ Car Series was at Road America. Here's Jim Murphy with the Honda Champ Car update.
Welcome to the Honda Champ Car update. I'm Jim Murphy. Join me now as we make a visit to the fast-paced world of the CART Series.
The Motorola 220 was one of the most bizarre kart race weekends in recent memory. While Bruno Junqueira came away with his career-first kart win, the story goes much deeper. Qualifying started off under rainy skies, with Mamo Gidley setting the provisional pole from the slow group of qualifiers. When the fast group went out, the rains continued and the track got wetter, dampening hopes of improved times. However, with time running out, the track dried, allowing the cars to make one final flying lap as the checkered flag flew, with Kenny Brack coming away with the pole.
In these conditions, you can help the car a little bit, but it's really more of a matter of finding the line where it's the most grip. And went out, and we planned everything pretty good, because we were one of the last cars on the track, and we really waited a long time, and then we went for it. And so happened that we went to... took the pole, so that was a great run.
Brack was also in the news this weekend as he announced he will be leaving Team Rahal in 2002 and has signed with Target Chip Ganassi Racing. During the race, rain was once again a factor. The start was delayed 10 minutes while crews worked to remove pooling water on the circuit. However, despite starting the race under the caution, a river of water continued to pour across the backstretch. First, Max Wilson hit the back of Brian Herta, flying over the top of Herta's car in the water, nearly hitting Herta on the head. Then after the track began to dry and slick tires were the order of the day, Mauricio Guzman and Toru Takagi spun in the same place on the track, bringing out the red flag so officials could tend to the circuit. 45 minutes later, the race continued, but soon thereafter came a frightening moment. Mamo Gidley approached the Billy Mitchell Bridge and lost the back end of the car. Swerving, he ran headlong into the bridge abutment, demolishing his car and sending it tumbling inverted into the grass. Anxious minutes passed, with everyone fearing the worst, as safety crews worked on the scene before the word finally came that Gidley was alert and awake. Ultimately, Gidley was driven to the hospital for a full evaluation, with nothing more severe than bruised knees and a possible concussion. When the race restarted, the field was split in fuel strategy, with the race coming down to a timed event. Adrian Fernandez looked to have the fuel strategy down pat, with just enough to make it to the end, but he didn't have the fuel to race with the leaders, finishing third before running out of methanol on the cool-down lap.
Very difficult because, track conditions were changing constantly, and, you didn't know where your car was going to be. So really, after the red flag, I was pretty happy because my car has been very quick, and I had a good dive with Michael at the beginning of the race there, and then, of course, there came some other yellows. And we had a strategy there where we pitted. I was on the back, so we took the last pit there to make full fuel on the tank. And then after that, John didn't know if we were going to go by time race or by lap. So he said, just be patient and just keep saving fuel, because this may turn into a time race. And at the end, because of where we were running, it was it was the right call. I couldn't fight at the end with Michael or with Bruno because of fuel. I ran out in turn two, so that's how close was it for us.
Michael Andretti was making move on Christian Fittipaldi for the lead in turn five when Christian Fittipaldi chopped down, making hard contact. Fittipaldi's day ended with damage while Michael Andretti continued on. However, it was Bruner Junqueras slipping past, relegating Andretti to a second-place finish.
Unbelievable day. Tough conditions at the start. I'm glad I wasn't Chris Neifel. That was a really difficult thing to do. I mean, I don't know what I would have done. I probably would have done exactly what he did. Basically, all the problems were because guys were going to slick, and when they were hitting that spot, it was just too much for slicks, and that's why they were crashing. So it was a bit self-inflicted, I think, some of those accidents. So, it was just a tough situation. And then at the start, Scott Dixon knocked me to the back again, and I thought, well, maybe this is a good omen. You know, maybe it's going to be like Toronto. Actually, as it ended up, it almost happened, but I think Christian Fittipaldi basically made it not happen. When I was going to pass him, I was right alongside of him, and he just flat out turned in on me, and we banged wheels, and that's when Bruno was able to pass me, and that was it. I think had I stayed ahead of Bruno, I don't believe he could have passed me because we were both similar speed. We were both running right together, and I think I was actually a little quicker than him. So it was a little frustrating at that point, but after the way this day went, I'll take second anyway. It's great to do it with Motorola, you know, with our team sponsor sponsoring the race, and to be able to come and have a good result and move up another spot in the championship, which was good.
Junqueras was able to open up enough of a lead that when he pitted for a final splash of fuel, he was able to rejoin the race just in front of Andretti, securing the win.
I think the race was really difficult for me. After the restart, I passed an article, he passed me again, and lost a lot of position. I went almost on the back of the field. But then I think my team target, Lola Toyota, was very good. I could pass people and start to go forward. And when I had like free track in front of me, I just tried to push, and go fast as I could, doing very good lap times. And I built up a gap that I could do a splash and go and return in front of Adrian. And that's it. I'm really happy to win the race.
So here's how they finished at the Motorola 220 at Road America. It was Bruno Junqueras over Michael Andretti and Adrian Fernandez. Rookie Scott Dixon and Gilles Deferrin round out the top five. Then it was Cristiano Damata, Elio Castroneves, Alex Tagliani, Patrick Carpentier, and Oriol Servia in the top ten. Roberto Moreno, Tony Kanaan, Alex Zanardi, Kenny Breck, and Shinji Nakano make up the first 15. 16th through 20th, Max Pappas, Michelle Jordan Jr., Christian Fittipaldi, Dario Franchitti, and Memo Gidley. 21 through 25, Jimmy Vassar, Toru Takagi, Maurizio Gruselman, Brian Herta, and Max Wilson. Rounding out the 26-car field, Paul Tracy. The time of the race, 2 hours, 0 minutes, 28.453 seconds, an average speed of 90.721 miles an hour. The margin of victory, 2.687 seconds. Elio Castroneves came into the weekend 1 point behind Kenny Breck, dropping to 2 back when Breck took the pole on Saturday. However, Kenny failed to score points when Elio came in 7th, securing Castroneves his first series championship lead of his career. Castroneves now has a 5-point advantage, 110-105 over Breck. Gilles Deferrin now sits 3rd with 99, while Michael Andretti moves into 4th with 89. Scott Dixon moves past Dario Franchitti into 5th in the championship. Next up for the FedEx Championship Series is the Molson Indy Vancouver in 2 weeks.
Each week, the Honda Champ Car Update brings you the latest news from the world of karts, straight from the track and directly from the driver's mouth. This experience is brought to you by the folks at Honda. Racing is part of who Honda is, and you can see that by visiting www.hondaracing.com.
In Formula 3000 news, international Formula 3000 championship favourite Justin Wilson is set to get a Formula 1 test before the year is out, according to his team manager, ex-Formula 1 driver Jonathan Palmer. Wilson scored his third win of the year in Hungary last weekend to extend his championship lead to 20 points over closest rival Mark Webber, and needs to score just one more point to become the first ever British Formula 3000 title winner. While fellow Formula 3000 frontrunners Mark Webber and Antonio Pisonia have both got behind the wheel of Formula 1 machinery, Wilson, despite success, has yet to be given the opportunity. Team manager Jonathan Palmer has been contacting all the Formula 1 teams about getting Wilson a Formula 1 test drive, with his main targets being McLaren, Williams, Jordan and Jaguar. Wilson has already apparently visited McLaren's factory for a preliminary seat fitting, but there are no plans for the team to give him a test run just yet. The FIA Sports Car Championship moves to Donington this weekend in the UK, and it's the dome duo of Jan Lammers and John Nielsen who have taken first and second positions on the grid for the race later today. Behind them is the Crema Lola of Sam Hancock and the championship-leading Ferrari 333SP of Jean-Marc Gounon. The qualifying session was apparently very wet, which led to a mix-up in the usual grid as one would normally see it. So, hopefully the weather might clear up and we'll see some good racing. Otherwise, it could be a very wet and interesting FIA Sports Car Championship race at Donington later today. It's been a busy pair of weekends for those drivers and teams competing in the American Le Mans Series. Last weekend, it was the Gran Turismo 3 Grand Prix at Mosport, and there it was all back to usual ways, with Audi once again winning the race, the car of Frank Bieler and Manuele Pirro being the winners over the 115-lap race from the Pinots of Magnussen and Brabham, who were two laps down. In third place was the Cadillac of Tinso and Collard, three laps down. Taylor Angeli in the other Cadillac, three laps down. And then Weaver and Leitzer in the Ryan Scott, three laps down. This weekend they were running at Mid-Ohio, and it was Pinots who then turned things around. It was the Pinots of Brabham and Magnussen who came out the eventual race winners over the Audi R8 of Dindo Capello and Tom Christensen. In third was the Ryan Scott of Weaver and Leitzinger, with the Audi of Bieler and Pirro finishing in fourth. The Audi of Herbert and Wallace, they rounded out the top five. That's the champion car. A good showing there for Johnny Herbert in one of his early outings in the American Le Mans Series.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
Racing service on the Good Sport 103.9. Keep in touch with Q Racing by calling 6299-2398.
Life can be cruel, not a lot you can do, but it helps if you've got a friend. A friend you can share with, comfort and care with. There's nothing quite like a friend. Nothing quite like a friend.
For more than 70 years, Lorna has played the pipe organ for church and charity. Now she's been given something in return, the Order of Australia and a delightfully affectionate Tessa's therapy companion dog called Ebony. Because of her frail condition, Lorna only occasionally plays the pipe organ these days, but still loves to play piano at home, usually to a highly appreciative audience of one, Ebony. You can help the Guide Dog Association train more pets as therapy companion dogs like Ebony by sending your donation today.
Nothing quite like a friend.
Stay in touch with the National Racing Service on Triple S FM. Triple S FM member the Adam Inniby Jockey Club, home of the Adam Inniby Cup.
Your move.
Your move.
Okay, your move.
Ha! Your move.
No, your moves? Check out the Triple S Chess Show every Sunday night at 9:30 to see if you're moving in the right direction.
Yes, checkmate.
For all your winning moves, tune into the Chess Show on Triple S FM. You're listening to the National Racing Service on 103.9 The Good Sport. Remember, for local harness racing action, Triple S member the Canberra Harness Racing Club.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
Yes, of course, interesting news this week is the fact that in Western Australia, the proposal put forward by Avesco to run a street race around the streets of Perth has been turned down by the Events Corp advisory group, which handle things over there for Western Australia. So, the old story that...
Hello?
the push to have more and more races run on street circuits in the case of Western Australia were and truly turned down by the West Australian government. And in this case as well, as I said, the West Australian government considered that the financial returns from holding the event were such that they were only getting a one-to-one cost-benefit ratio, which meant that in terms of the money they were pouring in, they weren't getting anything back out of it. As well, they considered that the television coverage that was being received for the event didn't match the profile for which they were going looking for. The other part of this, which is very interesting, is the response which has come out of the Avesco chairman, Tony Cochran, who said he was extremely disappointed with the decision, and he threatened to hold a Shell Championship Series round in another state on the same weekend as the rally next year. And if that's the case, I'd like to see how they go getting a licence under CAMS, particularly in relation to being an international sanctioned event and having a national event on the same weekend. I think they'd probably run themselves in a little bit of trouble there with the FIA and CAMS, but then again, we know how those things usually end up in the courts, and only the lawyers come out of it in front of that one.
Well, Peter Norton joins us on the line now from, well, an interesting VIP Pet Foods Queensland 500. Queensland, beautiful. 1 minute pissing down, rain the next.
Yes, it was a very exciting day's racing here, and the race really did have it all, including what could have been a controversial finish there with the red flag and then having to work out who won. But Australian Motorsport has had quite a few examples of finishes like that, so the rules are reasonably well understood, even though some people are probably a bit upset with what their luck has been and the result that they get. Anyway, I did put together a bit of a report, and we'll start to play that down the line in just 1 second.
All right. One that comes to mind, Colin, is you're all a pack of arseholes.
Yeah, that's a line from a few years ago.
The Touring Car Championship came to Queensland Raceway this weekend for the running of the VIP Pet Foods Queensland 500. And in front of 25,000 people, it's a race that had it all. High drama and excitement after starting in fine condition and ending in a thunderstorm and red flag conditions. And when the red flag comes out, leads to all of the mayhem about working out who was the winner, and it was Steve Johnson and Paul Radicich who were kind of the winners, even though Paul Radicich ended up in the sand trap and didn't actually take the checkered flag. Paul explains.
I don't think I've finished any in the gravel trap and won the race, so it's the first for me.
And of course, when a red flag comes out, we have winners, but we also have people who get the short end of the stick. Larry Perkins explains.
That may be hard on you, consider our nose is going back a lot. The red flag is that how the red flag comes out is a subjective thing, and that's always making really nice happening. One red flag going out, we've been good and efficient.
If there was one word to describe the race, it is drama. All the way from the start, where Rodney Forbes parked his car, which happened to be on fire in the pit lane, and it wasn't too far from the fuel churns. Luckily, fast action by the fire marshals prevented any disaster there. More disaster for the Gibson Motorsport team from the Craig Lowndes and Neil Crompton car. Neil Crompton started the race, and unfortunately he tangled with other cars, forcing a guard onto the tyre, resulting in a pit stop and more dramas, and that car was out pretty early as well. Another one of the four teams that was out early was Ford Tickford Racing of Glenn Seaton and Steve Richards, having top-end dramas in their engine, and other drama for the Young Guns with the Stone Brothers Racing team. There's some young, untried drivers were starting from positions 1 and 2 off the grid, and to be quite frank, they got a very poor start, both of them, fell back further into the pack, and these guys did their best to try to work their way back up through the field, but other dramas beset them, and a fairly disappointing result for Stone Brothers Racing. Plenty of other drama unfolded throughout the rest of the race, including the wet end and all of the drama that that brought, and probably the best way to describe it all is to let the drivers explain. Well, Radicich, congratulations on a great race victory that took a bit of luck and a bit of speed.
Yes, it did. I think towards the end there, probably a little bit of luck. I took advantage of when the weather turned bad and honed in on Russell, because I couldn't do anything about him while it was dry, but I was sort of just edging closer to him, but not fast enough. And when the weather came down, I honed right in, got past him, and, come in, put some wet tyres on and got out ahead of him. But believe me, the last couple of laps here were just atrocious, and I crossed the line and went spinning off into the gravel trap. So, they did the right thing. The race was red flagged, and it worked out in our advantage.
Now, of course, it's been a very long day. Let's go back to the first stint that you did, and you very quickly made your mark on the race by going through the field and taking the lead.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we sort of worked on a pace, and the pace was low 12s, and that's what I stuck to, and the opportunities to pass the other guys were there, so I just ran with it. And, you know, our car was working very well in the early stages, and I was just able to sort of stretch the lead away.
And Steve Johnson put in an excellent drive in that middle stint.
I did, yeah, and he did an excellent job, and Steve, you know, maintained the pace and scape, and that's all he needed to do, and, you know, we had a little bit of luck at the end, and gee, what a great turnaround for us to win one of these long-distance races.
Now, just before the rain came, you were in quite an enthralling dice with Russell Ingall, where you had about 3 seconds to make up.
Yeah.
Tell us how you're going in that stint.
Well, everything is fine. I mean, it's just we didn't have the car speed to pull Russell in, and we pushed and pushed and pushed. But each lap we'd get a little closer to him, but not quick enough. And, you know, when the rain came, that was the opportunity I needed to hone right in on him.
Now, of course, at the end, you spun off, but it was more than once. Tell us about the two incidents you had.
Well, the first incident was coming into turn four, crossed the line, gone down turn four, come down there, and the car just locked up. It wouldn't stop. There was no track in front of me. I just couldn't. So the car just locked up, and around she went. And then the track managed to keep it going, get out. Russell had gone by, and then when I crossed the finish line, the car once again aquaplaned and it was spun off. But luckily for me, the red flags come out, count back a lap, and there I was.
What was going through your mind when you're sitting there in the gravel trap?
Well, initially I thought I was over, because if they keep going round, who knows what would happen. But when I went to the gravel trap, I was first impressed that the race was over and done with. And very disappointed. Then all of a sudden I saw the red flags come out, and maybe it's not over and done. And then 20,000 people got up and started to cheer, so I figured 20,000 couldn't be wrong. And that was the first time I knew I'd run a race.
Yes, we saw you get out and give the crowd a bit of a wave there. And you're right, pretty exciting stuff. And I guess the key to this result is not just luck. You had the form all day.
Well, we had the form at the right time of the day, and circumstances played into my hands, and the team did a great job. The strategy was good, the pit stops were fast, everything just worked on that particular time, and the key to it was that lap, one lap back from the red flag, and that was it, and we were in front.
So you take a fair bit of confidence in towards Bathurst. You've got a fairly proven preparation.
Yeah, we have. I mean, Bathurst is a standalone race. Sure, it's long distance, but double distance. But hey, let's just enjoy this one, and we'll get our preparations right so we can have a good go at it for the mountain.
Fantastic. Thanks, Paul. And as you said, enjoy your win.
Thanks a lot.
Russell Ingall, congratulations on a fine second place, but it could have been a whole lot more.
Yeah, it could have been. I mean, you can't control most things in a race, but you can't control weather, and it was at the cost of the race. But, mate, I can't complain, because the car was competitive and we would have won it, you know, out of being fast, and that's the way you win races. But, look, the Shell team were the same. They did a very good job, and good on them.
Now, before the rain, you and Paul were matching times, and the gap between 2 and 3 seconds. Tell us about that spin. Pretty exciting stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the team was keeping me informed what times he was doing, and I wanted to keep a 4 second buffer, which is what I did. I had a bit of a hiccup with a back marker, but pulled it back out to 4 seconds. So I had pace there if I needed it.
And of course, when the rain did come, you ended up in second place with a red flag. Tell us about how disappointing it is when you've done everything correct all day long, stayed out of trouble, and then to be decided on just the luck of when the red flag is called.
Yeah, I mean, I thought a pace car probably would have been more appropriate, but I decided a red flag, and I don't know who caused that shot. Well, actually, I do know who caused that shot, but that's life, you know. Yeah, look, you got to cop it. Rules are rules, you know. The rules have been and always have been for years that events red flag that goes back a lap, so that's life.
I guess the positive thing you should take out of this is looking towards Bathurst and the championship.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Bathurst, we're going to be strong. Larry's always fast up there. And so I think we've proven we can do the business. No complaints. We'll be all right. We'll get back again.
Russell Ingall, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Mark Scaife, you look as though you had the pace out there for most of the day, but wasn't to be at the end. What made you slip back that bit?
Just a combination of a couple of little things. We had a massive drama with the windscreen with vision for Jason in the last bit, which was the bit that really cost us any chance of winning it. I think in terms of speed, we were right up there and, you know, probably in the middle part of the race as fast as anyone. So these things happen. You lead the race and, you know, don't get a result out of it. Sometimes it works and other times it doesn't. So got a tactical bit of bad.
And the team showed that the 15th starting position really wasn't a handicap at all.
Well, not at all. I mean, basically, if you can get from 15th to lead the middle part and, you know, around the lap 100, we were in the lead and the car was fantastic. So I think, sometimes things fall your way and on this particular occasion didn't really, but, you know, that's how it is.
Now, looking forward to the championship, it's good you had that buffer there already.
Well, it's good I had that buffer, but at the same time, you know, we've got to work hard to get a bit bigger buffer, I think, because, at Winton, we'll want to do a really good job there, and I'm going to make sure that we hopefully come out of there with a really good result.
You know, in some respects, HRT had all their eggs in one basket, having you and Jason in the same car. Will that be reviewed for Bathurst?
Well, we will review it. I don't know what we'll do about it, whether we change it or not, but we'll certainly look at it. It's something that we've really got to properly assess.
Okay, Mark, all the best for the rounds to come.
Thank you very much.
Tony Longhurst, about you proved that age is no barrier for a fantastic run out there.
No, it's a fantastic one. You look at the young blokes, you know, Stone Brothers cars in the wall, spinning around. No, had a great run, and it was great to be able to run a Mark Stace pace, and the Johnson car with Radish in it, so tremendous, fantastic team I'm in.
And, yes, you really have shown that you're a master here, because you had a very good running last year as well.
Yeah, we could have easily won the race, but the team miscounted the lap, so we had to do an extra pit stop. But the place I really like Bathurst, you know, I enjoy going up there, so I can't wait to drive one of the HRT cars around Bathurst.
Now, tell us about your day. You were actually leading there at one point, but you slipped back a bit.
So in a bit overall, I picked up a puncher about 10 laps from in. I was following Brett, and there was a bit of rub on the road. Picked up and left front tyre. As they had to come in about 2 or 3 laps earlier than I would have for the wet weather tyres when the rain came down. So we put wet on it, so I struggled for a couple of laps, and we finished it. So it was a shame. We actually could have been on the podium.
Well, yes, getting the wet on early, if it had been a pace car or something like that, you would have been joining on the spot.
Yeah, it's the luck of the draw. We just missed out. The race had won. One more lap, we probably would have been on the podium, but that's the way it goes.
Well, Tony Longhurst, another place where you've had recent good form is Bathurst, so we look forward to seeing you and Thomas running there.
Thank you very much.
Matt Neal, it was an exciting, dramatic day racing out there. How was your day?
It was all right. It was fairly busy. I went out, did the first stint and the third one, so I was out there in the middle. And we just had a few dramas with the brakes, sort of, and intermittently getting a long pedal and that, so I kept you on your toes. But besides that, I could have been a little bit faster, but all right, kept him on pace.
Now, Paul looked as though that the heat in his flu would really knock him around after that first stint. Was it contemplated that you do a double stint?
Yeah, they're going to see how dude was when he got out and after a rest. It does get hot in that car. You know, you want some good ventilation. It's amazing. Something as daft as the sun going in, you can tell. Like, it immediately falls inside the car. And, you're almost praying for rain to come in the dark clouds.
And how did Paul go in the rain there?
He went good. I mean, it's almost a shame they stopped it. We'd have picked up about 3 or 4 places. So, but, you know, you've got to think safety-wise, you know, and everyone's, it was pretty dangerous out there at the end. So, you know, I think, the Rat and Custard, they did a fantastic job. I feel sorry for Russell and Larry because they had it at the end. But great, some good driving.
Now, Matt, are we going to see you in one of the races before Bathurst?
No, I don't think so. I've got to go back to Europe now, and I've got 2 rounds in the European Championship in the Nissan Primera coming up at Nürburgring in Germany and then Brahma in Spain. So that's going to keep you pretty busy over the next 5 weeks.
They sound like pretty exciting tracks, but do they get results as interesting and exciting as this?
Probably they don't go sunshine to madness of rain and back to sunshine as quickly as they do here, but I doubt anyone in the world does. You know, it's I was looking for the rainbow everywhere. You know, it'll be interesting. It's rough out there. I think it's very competitive here. I mean, probably the most competitive in the world at the moment. But in Europe, it's rough. They do fight hard.
Oh, well, that looks like you'll be back for Bathurst, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. The dude at the moment, if we can get him in the new car, I think he'll go well. The VT, I think he's wringing times out of it, which aren't in it at the moment. He's cool as a cucumber out of it, and he's on fire in it, so he's the boy to be with at the moment.
Matt Neal, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
David Bernard, your car started from second on the grid, but it was a pretty tough day out there. Tell us about it.
Yeah, that's right. Matty White started the car. No, I qualified second. Matty started. He got a shocking start. Just nerves, big tank for the first time. Doesn't bother me, you really have to expect that. But then he did a fantastic job. Once he got going, he did a really good job, so that's promising for Bathurst, which is upcoming. Other than that, the race was up and down. Had plenty of pace, but we've got a bit of a problem with the car where it's cutting the inside the wheel, and I had four flat tyres. The fourth one put me out altogether. We decided that we wouldn't go out and risk it. So, with the continuing problem, we passed it.
So you've shown you've got the pace out there. All you need to do is find a flat.
Yeah, that's right. We'll have a look at it and work out what was going on. Yeah, professional team, the same as well. They'll sort it out the time and we'll be back up the top.
Well, at the end, it did seem an amazing way to finish the race. These officials, these Vesco officials, are jokes, aren't they? They don't understand that yellow comes before red.
I guess that would resolve a lot of the issues that seem to pop up in these circumstances.
I guess
the difference to previous times when the red flag has been pulled during a downpour is that the track here did not seem to be blocked in any way. So, Craig, I guess I have to agree with you there that a yellow flag would probably have addressed the situation and would have led to a very different result.
It would have indeed. And, NASCAR at the moment has gone to a procedure where they see a window of opportunity that they can get the race running its completion. They do one lap under yellow, they bring the cars to a halt at the back of the racetrack or in pit lane, and then when the flood has subsided and they've got the track dry again, now in our sort of racing we don't need the track to be completely dry again, we just need, mainly the pools of water off the circuit, go back out, one more lap under red and under yellow, and then under my scenario, you would have had a two-lap shootout to the finish. Now, I'm a Blue Oval Badge supporter as much as you are, even though my jacket says something different, thanks very much, Princess. But that would have been a more equivocal way of deciding a race, particularly a race that has that many points up for grabs.
Yeah, you're dead right. The Ford fans were relieved that the result was called the way it was, but how you've just described it is perhaps a more equitable way of doing it. It does seem somewhat unfair that someone can win a race while sitting in a sand trap. And, of course, we heard Colin describing before the Bathurst from all those years ago when the winner had the broken car. It just seems a little bit odd, doesn't it? Mind you, NASCAR that you referred to, there have been a few races there where a wrecked car has crossed the line, but at least in those circumstances, the wreck has slid across the finish line to take the checkered flag. There'll be plenty of debate about this, and it will go on for quite a long time, and I guess really what a lot of the Ford teams have to do is go away and think about what they're doing in their preparation and what's going wrong. Very disappointing form from Gibson Motorsport. Okay, there was a few on-track incidents that led to Neil Crompton having to park that car.
Pardon? Having to park that car like it was a choice?
Well, yes, good point. They had a safety car a little bit after that. They could have gone out again, but you're right, Crompton really threw away all possibilities there. But also looking at some of the other highly fancied Ford teams, Ford Ticket Racing, very disappointing once again. Never really showed to be leading on the pace there. And just like last year here at Queensland Raceway, one of their cars is out quite early with mechanical gremlins. You just have to look through all the Ford teams except for the Dick Johnson Racing. They really didn't put their stuff together very well for an endurance race. And that's where some of the smaller four teams have actually turned out to be the shining light. And congratulations to Paul Wheel and some of the other small guys who've done very well. And it really has come through that the regular performers in endurance racing, HRT, and now Kmart Racing, and also Perkins Racing. They're class acts. They really have this down to a fine art, and it takes a bit of bad luck, really, for them not to win.
It is going to be a interesting couple of weeks now as we go back to Winton for a short format series of races, and then we go back to, is it Auckland then Bathurst or Bathurst then Auckland? I can't remember the order.
It's Bathurst then Auckland and then a big finale at Sandown Raceway. And yeah, it does seem to be a little bit higgledy-piggledy, doesn't it? You have sprint rounds followed by endurance rounds, and then you have some that do have pit stops and some that don't. Variety is nice, but it does get a little bit confusing. In next weekend's show, we'll bring you a few snippets from an interview with Tony Cochrane, where he spoke about the renewal of the TV coverage contract with Channel 10, and also some of the other views for the future and some other issues about the state of V8 racing in Australia at the moment. So we'll have some interesting comments there, and including a very assertive stand on the future of the Canberra race.
All right, now just for people who haven't heard, Channel 10 have got the rights to the V8 Supercars for another 5 years. If you could just give us the basics of it, because we'll go into the detail in next week's program.
Yes, basically it's a renewal of the five-year deal, so another 5 years starting in 2002. And I guess the interesting part about the announcement is a very clear indication that the V8 racing has priority. And that's particularly important because Channel 10 will be a broadcaster of the AFL next year as well. So that could lead to some heartache about conflicting events. But the announcement today was very much the V8s do get priority. An example is the Canberra race for the long weekend in June next year. There will be a Saturday Aussie Rules game, but Channel 10 will allow one of their other broadcasting partners in that deal, so Channel 9 or Foxtel, will broadcast the Saturday AFL game so that they can stay true to their V8 coverage.
That's going to last the first Saturday that they cut an AFL match. I can guarantee you that. The first Saturday they cut an AFL match, you will have 1 million phone calls to Channel 10 complaining, and they won't do it again. I'm a big AFL fan, I'm a big motorsport fan, but there is no way in this country that you're going to cut AFL for motor racing.
It's really relying on the coverage of Channel 9, isn't it? If Channel 9 step up and provide an equal quality coverage on that Saturday, then things will work out. What wasn't discussed is what about priority to other motorsport events? You know, things like the Rally Australia. We know that Tony Cochrane's not too impressed with the Western Australian government, and he's threatened to schedule a V8 race on that same weekend and steal the TV coverage. Well, of course, it was only a few weeks ago that Tony Cochrane and David Richards from ProDrive and having the TV rights to the World Rally Championship, they were all quite friendly in talking about how they can share technology and how they can get the ProDrive secrets into V8 racing. Tony Cochrane has to decide who he's upset with this week.
It is going to be an interesting one. We're looking forward to that press conference, which you're going to have the snippets of next week's program, because, as you said, you were able to go quite pointedly at him about the Canberra race. And let's face it, Channel 10 have got the AFL Grand Final next year. They're not going to jeopardise any AFL contract. Channel 9 won't be able to show it because Channel 9's focus will be Saturday afternoon rugby league.
They made quite a few references to the fact that Channel 10 are becoming the sports station. They've got coverage of a lot of high-profile things. And I think, as we found with Channel 9, as they accumulate more sports that they're covering, it leads to some pretty tough decisions. We're at a motorsport event making a motorsport announcement, so of course motorsport's going to come first. I think over the coming years, motorsport fans will have to watch this space and see if they get bumped down the pecking order, as has happened in the past.
Well, currently you can watch the race on the net at QuickNet at 5 o'clock tonight, or from 5 o'clock tonight. The streaming was meant to be there. I checked, it wasn't, but I'm sure I know what the internet's like. Sometimes you have technical difficulties. Or 8 o'clock on Fox Sport on a Monday night, you can watch the race replayed.
Yeah,
Tony also mentioned the international TV deals, how they're finally coming to fruition, in particular getting into the US market. Now, they announced that one a couple of months ago, that Speed Vision were providing coverage, and we haven't really seen much of it. I check the Speed Vision guides over the internet on a regular basis so I can tell my Canadian buddies, hey, have a look at this stuff, and it doesn't seem to be there yet. So for this year's racing, it probably looks as though it might be an end-of-year off-season coverage, but Tony Cochran today suggested that next year Speed Vision will be taking the racing throughout the season much closer to live, and including a TV deal that will have the Bathurst 1000 race televised live into Europe. So in some respects, we do have to give him a little bit of credit that he is taking the V8 racing to the world. Mind you, there's also a lot of competition on Speed Vision. There's a lot of sports gaining coverage there. And let's change category there for a minute. It's interesting that the kart racing, the Kart FedEx Championship, in announcing some of their TV arrangements for next year, they were very proudly saying that they've got a certain number of races that will be live, free-to-air, and the rest of the races will be on Speed Vision. I think that's another chink in the kart armour. Speed Vision, it is very good, provides excellent coverage, but in many respects it is for the secondary categories who get an airing there. So unfortunately it looks as though kart are losing their prominence in the US market in terms of TV, which is further builds on the problems they have in terms of attendances at the gate, and the lack of US drivers in there. So poor old kart, I think, have got quite a battle still ahead of them.
Yes, and you've got to remember that next year, half of the 16 IRL races are being shown on ABC Live, and the other half are being shown on ESPN Live. So for a kart to be bumped down to Speed Vision, that's like third tier.
Yes, I have to agree with you there. I mean, I was a big fan of Speed Vision, but they were desperate for content at that stage, and they were providing, as you're saying, third tier events. It looks like the balance is swinging. IRL is winning the war and kart is slipping back, which is quite a turnaround from a couple of years ago, even a couple of years ago when they were looking at sort of mergers and other ways of coexisting. I don't think that's on the cards anymore. My beloved kart, I'm afraid to say, is struggling somewhat.
All right. Well, Peter, thanks very much for your work right over the weekend. Of course, don't forget you can check out Peter's reports at www.v8x.com.au throughout the weekends of race meetings and, of course, here with us on Inside Motorsport. And, Colin, as we have to wrap it up now, you want to gloat just one more time.
Yeah, remember who picked the winning car last week?
Well, it was all luck. It was all just in the announcement of the red flag there, Colin. I think Craig has put forward a very convincing argument that they might have won on paper, but the moral winners were Larry Perkins and Russell Engle.
Oh, now we are sounding like an AFL show. We're talking about moral victory, so we better let Tuddy take it over, and, well, he can tell you how Collingwood had no moral victories this weekend.
Well, the colourful characters of European touring car racing is once again down under, driving with Brad Jones in the Aussie Email Falcon. John Cluen, welcome back to Australia.
Ah, it's good to be back, apart from this appalling weather I think we'll be suffering down here, but I'm sure that'll go away when we get to Queensland.
Yes, Queensland, beautiful one day, perfect the next. Too bad we can't say the same about the track. It's not quite as challenging as what all race fans would like to see, and certainly not as technical as the Bathurst.
No, I mean, Bathurst is undoubtedly the most interesting, challenging, demanding, dangerous track I've ever been on in my life. But it is a track that I thoroughly enjoy, and every European that has ever been across here and had the fortune to race here goes away raving about it. It's just a fantastic place. But you're right, the flip side is that we have to put up with places like this one up in Queensland, which is basically like a big paperclip. It's not interesting, but it's a race, and it's a fairly long race, so we're going to have to work hard at it.
Mm. Long races in touring cars, normally what you would drive is 24 hours, so 500 kilometres is not a very long race for a touring car driver.
Well, it's not necessarily, but a lot of the sprint races in Europe are probably only about an hour. This type of race here in Australia, you spend sort of 161 laps at Queensland, and we'll probably do 50 odd laps each stint. You're in the car for a good hour and a bit, in temperatures last year, which were something like 50 degrees inside the car. It was that warm, the ambient outside. But, you know, an hour is a long time in one of those things when you're working real hard, and this championship today is the most competitive saloon car championship anywhere in the world. And, you know, you've got guys breathing down your neck, you're all over them, they're all over you. You're working damned hard for an hour.
Mm. Now, last time I spoke to you, you probably don't remember this, but the last time I spoke to you, you were with Jan Muller in the Vauxhall at Donington Park getting ready for a pretty tough season that it was that year. In fact, your final year in the British Touring Car Championship. Now you're in a Falcon, and from what I gather, it's your second drive in a Falcon in your career.
My second drive in a Ford in my entire career. I've been a General Motors driver for something like 20 years nearly, and all of the visits I've had to Australia have been in Holden Commodores, until I came out a couple of years ago and drove with Cameron McLean in the Falcon, but it was the old one. This is the first opportunity to drive the latest Falcon, and for me it's an interesting career move at this stage to go from General Motors after all these years to driving a Ford. I've had to put new Ford decals on my crash helmet. It makes me feel different, you know.
That's it. And with this sort of racing, I know that you do have a penchant that, or a bent that says, touring cars with big engines are a good thing to do.
Ah, no argument. I mean, ever since I drove a Commodore, or a V8 car, they drive from the proper end, they sound right, you know, they breathe fire and brimstone, and they're just spectacular cars to watch. And a few years ago, they weren't quite as competitive as they are today. But as the championship has progressed, the stability and the regulations you have here in Australia, whilst touring car championships appear to be tripping up over all over the world and falling apart one way or another, you appear to have in this country a championship format that works, and it goes from strength to strength, and the numbers increase every year, and the competitiveness of the whole championship. I couldn't believe last year that I qualified the car 16th on the grid last year, and 0.2 seconds would have made me 9th. And I came away from qualifying thinking, geez, this is one hell of a championship now. And you know, it is the only successful one numerically and competitively anywhere, I think, in the world today.
Well, you would have run across the people you're now running with, the Joneses, Kim and Brad Jones, in the days of getting down to Macau and a few of those international touring car events where Australians did wander in every now and then. How have you found their level of professionalism and what they've brought into the supercar series compared to what you saw with Cameron, who was really a privateer?
Yeah, Cameron was a privateer, but I mean, I'd already driven for a privateer team in a Holden in the Pinnacle team with Tony Scott a number of years ago, and in fact we finished 6th overall at Bathurst, which is still the highest finishing that a privateer has ever come. So the privateer teams, actually, in some cases the well-run, well-funded ones, can still achieve quite a lot against the mighty factory teams, particularly a race like Bathurst where, you know, weather permitting, it's a really interesting race because anything can happen. You pick the right calls with the pace cars, you stay out of trouble or you get in trouble, and anything can happen. You know, it gives you an opportunity to fight with the big guys at the front. So I've seen professionalism in a lot of the teams over here, and I mean, you're right, I knew Brad and I knew Kim for many, many years, and what they did with the Audis was a fantastically dominant era in super touring here in Australia. And the way that they run the team is very good, but it's still, everyone seems to enjoy themselves, and what they're doing is very professional in the way that they treat the sponsors, they look after the sponsors, and Aussie Mel, I'm sure, are getting a tremendous return from what they invest in this team. And it's not just a matter of putting the name in the car and say, well, there you go, guys. They work really hard at it, and they do a very good job of promoting each and every one of the sponsors. And that's what is pretty encouraging, because, you know, you sometimes don't see that level of professionalism in Europe unless you've got major manufacturer funding. And, of course, that's withdrawing all over the world now, and it's going into Formula One. And because of that, a lot of the domestic series suffer because the manufacturers are no longer pumping the money in.
Mm. what other events have you been able to do which you weren't able to do previously?
Well, because I'd been a contracted driver to General Motors, it curtailed my activities in what I drove, and sometimes I was offered drives all over the world and couldn't take them up because they were with the opposing competitors, you know, different manufacturers. After I stopped racing in BTCC, I've had the opportunity to race a number of things, you know, from sports cars, Porsches, Dodge Vipers. I actually set a team up this year to run two Ascars in a British series that was supposed to start earlier on in the year, but due to lots of technical problems with the cars, the engines, the tyres, and in fact the circuit not being ready on time either, we've sort of taken a back step on that this year, and we're going to recreate something in 2002. But it's given me the opportunity to see various other formula. For instance, when I got involved in the British GT series, it struck me that would be quite a good way to go. There'd be longer races, there'd be two drivers, you have to work at it. But it wasn't professional. It was basically a bunch of wealthy guys that were paying drivers to sit alongside them. And they couldn't drive sheep, these guys. And you've got the good guy in there working real hard, then you've got the other guy who gets in who's like 3 seconds, 4 seconds adrift of the pace, and you go backwards, and it's just not what I wanted to be involved in. So I tipped that in, and I've just been sort of planning what we're going to do with Ascar, but as I say, we've had one or two engine problems as a series, and it's going to go very slowly this year, but next year it's going to become huge.
Now the program you're talking about is going to be running at the new Rockingham circuit, which Karth's going to be visiting soon.
That's correct. It's we've already had one race there, which I won, but we have, as I say, engine dramas, which meant that something like 19 of the cars lost engines. We've had to sort of sit down and rethink how we're going to do that, and that means that there'll be a limited program for the remainder of this year, which will include the Lausitzring in Germany, which again is a new oval that was completed during this year. And again, back at Rockingham to support both the Champ Car rounds there. At the end of the year, we've got to sit down and take stock and say, well, is this going to be a new format? Because that stadium type of racing entertainment is something that, you know, you can see every corner, you can see all of the action all of the time. It's a new concept for the UK, and I know that it worked pretty successfully here in Australia with Calder Raceway, but to try and introduce that stadium mentality of spectating in the UK, I'm not sure how ready the British public are for that and whether they could cope with it or not. So we'll just have to wait and see.
I don't know about ticketing prices and the like for races over in Europe, but certainly that is what makes it so popular in America, is the fact that you can see everything from your seat, whereas when they do road racing over there, the ticket prices are so high, they want to put you in a seat, but in the seat, you can only see such a small part of the circuit.
Well, the ticket prices, certainly in the UK for the Champ Car round, are going to be very heavy. They're going to be very expensive because it's the one chance that they're going to have to recoup a bit of the revenue spend that they've got. They've got to get a bit of an income back. I think that's maybe not the way to bring in the dyed in the wool motorsport public will go and watch. They'll pay the money, it doesn't matter really how much it is. But what we need to try and do is to fill the grandstands, and you're only going to do that with bringing new people along to a completely new concept of motorsport in our country. And without making the prices comparable to other stadium type environment, then we're not going to succeed in doing that. You know, a man's not going to take his wife and his kids along when it's going to cost him, you know, something like $900 for the day. He's not going to spend that kind of money.
And I guess what a lot of people around the world don't realise is when you say speedway in Britain and Europe, you're really talking about 500cc motorcycles.
That's right. I mean, a speedway track in the UK is exactly that. It's motorcycles. There's some dirt racing. There's some short 3/8 of a mile oval tracks that they're using V8 600 horsepower stock cars, really. But what we're talking about at the likes of the Lausitzring or Rockingham are 600 horsepower cars that will do, they're American stock cars, really, that on a mile and a half super speedway. And it's basically like what you had here, but I'm not sure that we're capable of running those things in the UK yet, and I'm not sure that the public are ready for it.
Yeah,
we're only just sort of getting dialed in at McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken, you know.
For yourself, though, it is a busy schedule because the rumours over here, and you've confirmed them to me off air, so I'll let you confirm them on there now, is that the Volvo Race of Touring Car Champions is going to go ahead, and of course, you were one of the first men they picked.
That's right. I got a phone call some months ago to say, would I be interested in doing the race in Sweden, and when they told me what it was, because I'm a Volvo dealer in the UK, and I've had a real close connection with Volvo for many years, but never as a driver. I was once offered a drive when Volvo just entered the championship in the wagon with their 850 wagon, and I turned it down at the time because the car I had was more competitive. And of course, when you turn Tom Walkinshaw down, you don't really get a second chance. So my only opportunity was to keep beating them on the track. But the opportunity to go to Sweden now and race against sort of, there's going to be 12 cars. There'll be one spare car just in case somebody roots one, but there's going to be 12 champions from various formats. There's Rickard Rydell, there's Alan Menu, there's myself, there's Tom, I think Tom Christensen may be doing it, and a number of very, very well-known saloon car pilots. So it could be quite an interesting race, and I'm not sure. Volvo have obviously got enough body shells left that they're trying to dispose of before the winter months. Since they're inviting a bunch of us out there to destroy them.
Fair enough, then. And of course, this is going to be based on something like the Bursey Kart Racing or the Canary Islands Rally.
The idea is somewhat similar. I think it's a race that they're planning to do on a number of occasions in the future. But it's a preamble to a championship that they see being taken off in Sweden next year. It's supposed to be, it'll be the S60, it'll be a turbo, it'll have 260 horsepower, it'll be on slicks, and it'll be a proper little race car, but they reckon it's going to be a series which they're going to get high exposure on that S60 range throughout next year.
Mm. And with yourself now here in Australia, two postponed testing sessions already, so I guess the next time you get onto the track is practice day at Queensland?
Yeah, it's looking that way. I mean, the plan was to come out and try and get some testing in before the race, but due to weather, everything else was ready, the car's ready, and the team are ready, and everything was looking good, but we can't control the weather. So it was just, it was a no-go, and I wasn't aware that there was only 12 testing days allowed in the year, and the team are not really, they don't want to compromise a day just to stand and wait to maybe get a half hour dry running.
Mm.
And I can understand that. So, you know, I think Brad's proved that the car's getting better and better every time they run with it, and I'm quite confident that when we get up to Queensland, he's going to dial the car in, he's going to make sure that it's right, and then we'll go for it.
And no doubt they mentioned to you about the last Pom to come out here and test the car.
Yeah, I read a bit in the UK that big tall wanky Pom from Birmingham came across and wrapped up big Kev's car for him. So yeah, I mean, he's never been much of a driver, that Matt Neal, anyway, so that didn't really surprise me.
Well, it's going to be an interesting time for you out on the track. I'm sure you're going to enjoy the competition, if not having to turn right four times and left four times.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm sure that there's, we go down the straight, we turn right, and we turn right again, and we turn left, and then we turn right, and we're back to the start line. So it's not a most complicated one, but really, I think the race, as I understand it, for any team in Australia, the race to win is the Bathurst one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, not that this is not important this weekend, it's very important, but the one that we're working towards would be to win Bathurst or get a good result at both these rounds.
Mm. Had you ever run the Sandown 500 before it got moved to Queensland?
No. The problem always was that each of the years that I drove at Bathurst, the Sandown race was always a clashing ground with something in the UK or in Europe. So it was never possible to do both. But now the way the calendar works out, then running the two makes a bit of sense, because you then can get your head around the car and the team and the strategies prior to going up to do the 1001 at Bathurst.
Mm. It does give you a bit of an insight on how everything goes together, and for yourself, you and Brad Jones are a fairly similar build. Brad might have a couple of kilos on you.
Well, we've he was a little concerned when I spoke to him on the telephone when we were trying to put the deal together. And he said, well, I'm not sure about the driving seat, you know, you might not quite fit and this and that. And when I've sat in the car, it's perfect. You know, he and I are, goodness knows quite how, because he's got big long legs and I've got wee short legs, but we've somehow managed to get it that the driving position will be fine. I can't see out of the car, but the driving position's fine. At least I can touch the pedals.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have a chat with you, John Clellan, and we do wish you all the best up there at the Queensland 500 this weekend.
That's good. Thanks, Craig.
Believe me, you know, the last couple of laps here were just atrocious, and, you know, I crossed the line and was spinning off into the gravel trap, so, you know, they did the right thing. The race was red flagged, and it worked out in our advantage.
Oh, I thought a pace car probably would have been more appropriate, but I decided a red flag, and I don't know who caused that shot. Well, actually, I do know who caused that shot, but that's life.
No, I had a great run, and it was great to be able to run a mark safe pace, and the Johnson car was ready for it, so tremendous, fantastic team I'm in.
And yes, you really have shown that you're a master here, because you had a very good running last year as well.
Yes, we could have easily won the race, but the team miscounted the lap, so we had to do an extra pit stop. But the place I really like, Bathurst, you know, I enjoy going up there, so I can't wait to drive one of the HRT cars around Bathurst.
Just get hot in that car, you know, you want some good ventilation. It's amazing, something as dark as the sun going in, you can tell, like, it immediately falls inside the car, and yeah, you're almost praying for rain to come in the dark clouds.
And how did Paul go in the rain there?
He went good. I mean, it's almost a shame they stopped it. Would have picked up about three or four places, so but you know, you've got to think safety wise, you know, when everyone's it was pretty dangerous out there at the end. So, you know, I think the Rats and Custard, they did a fantastic job. I feel sorry for Russell and Larry, because they had it at the end.
Up and down, had plenty of pace, but we've got a bit of a problem with the car where it's cutting the inside of the wheel, and I had four flat tyres. The fourth one put me out altogether. We decided that we wouldn't go out and risk it. So yeah, it was a continuing problem. We passed it.
So you've shown you've got the pace out there. All you need to do is kind of bust it.
Yeah, that's right. We'll have a look at it and work out what was going. Yeah, professional team that's same up as well. They'll sort of.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple SFM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.